If you're looking for the TAS Podagogy podcast, it's now got its own channel. For interviews with leading education researchers about the topics that matter to you, and for teaching and learning, search TAS Podagogy. That's P-O-D-A-G-O-G-Y on your podcast platform.
Hello and welcome to this Career Clinic edition of the TAS Podcast. I'm Grainne Hallahan, and today I'll be delving into the world of CPD and finding out how we make sure our time out of class is time well spent. With so many developments and learning opportunities on offer, it can be hard to see the wood for the trees. So my guest today will be offering some guidance. For more on this topic, why not register for our upcoming webinar with educator and author Jill Berry. You can find more details and register for this session by following the link in this podcast description. Hello and welcome to the TES podcast. I'm joined today by Sarah Barker, who is an English teacher at Orchard School in Bristol. She's been head of faculty for 10 years at two previous schools and has just finished 2 years as an assistant head teacher. She's now concentrating on finishing her MA in English Literature and is enjoying being back in the classroom a bit more. She's run CPD on a school level, local level and at national conferences. She also blogs at roundlearning.org and she produces YouTube revision videos for English that you can find on her blog. Thank you for joining me today, Sarah.
Hi, Grainne. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So it's been first week back. How's that been?
Yeah, it's been lovely to see the students again. Like, school doesn't quite feel the same when it's an empty building, does it? So that's been really good. And we've had really, really amazing attendance at Orchards. So everything seems to be going smoothly so far. Thank you.
It's funny, at this time of year when you see all the new NQTs and the trainees posting on Facebook and on Twitter about, oh, I'm so excited, it's my first classroom, this is my first, and setting everything up, and that kind of giddy excitement that you feel when you first start, it makes me almost nostalgic back to my trainee and NQT days of when you first walk into the classroom and that overwhelming feeling of excitement.
There is an exhilaration that comes with that, although this year it's slightly different for us and for most of the other schools in our area, where they don't have their own classroom because the students are in villages and the teachers are moving to those rooms at secondary. So that's something a bit different for them. But I think the same sense of excitement of having their own classes is there. It's absolutely.
It's that feeling of, I've been training for this, I'm preparing for this, I'm now going to go and put everything I've learned into action. But then you also have that sense of, oh my gosh, there's so much that I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, it's just the start of a very, very long learning journey, isn't it? Entering teaching.
You did an English degree, didn't you?
I did a linguistics degree.
So when you first started teaching, what did you find were the gaps in your knowledge? Was it more, the gaps that you needed to fill, was it more of a knowledge thing, or do you think it was pedagogy, or?
I think when I first entered the profession, my subject knowledge gaps were probably with the English literature, and I've been sort of studying ever since, really, to try to address that. And I think I've possibly done it so much that my subject knowledge has swung the other way. But I do remember that CPD, when I first started, was very, very much based on classroom practice, pedagogy, how to approaches for the classroom. That was around 2003. I did my PGCE, and 2004 I was an NQT.
Wow. I think it's I remember being shown a course catalogue and being told to have a look through this and pick a course that you think will be useful for you, and just being quite overwhelmed at how many different things there were in that course catalogue, and as a new teacher, not quite sure what it was that I should be looking at, because I didn't know what I didn't know yet. And the course that I did end up going on, I don't think I found particularly useful. It was about reading, and it was pitched for, really, it was primary school teachers. And I remember thinking, oh, this, I've made the wrong choice. I've chosen the wrong thing. And actually, the best CPD I got in my trainee year was having my PPA was next, was in the office, and my head of department was teaching sixth form at the time. And listening to him teach his sixth form class was so useful for lots of different reasons.
I can imagine. I think getting out into the classrooms, observing, seeing how things are done is not only helpful, but it's also a confidence booster, isn't it, for less experienced teachers to see some of the things that they're actually doing and they're doing well, and they can see their own practice reflected in what other people are doing.
It's funny because we don't use that time. If you took an hour to observe another teacher, that wouldn't always necessarily count towards like the hours of CPD you're meant to have in a year. But it's actually a really useful thing to do, isn't it?
It is. And we have, at my current school, we have a coaching model. So we don't do formal observations. And it's certainly not top down. So we don't have SLT coming in and staying in the room and then giving you a report on your how you've performed. We it's more peer coaching, short drop-ins, and really, really sharply focused pointers to what could be done differently in quite small areas to make these kind of incremental gains. And that can also be subject knowledge based or pedagogical. So that, I think that's a model that works really well. I'm really enjoying that.
I think I'd recommend that to all trainee teachers and all NQT teachers, really, because obviously in training you get a lot more observation, but for NQTs you have a couple of observations, but that's it for the year. But actually I'd always say invite people into your classroom, ask people to come and watch you and to give you feedback on very, like you said, very specific areas, because too much can be overwhelming, can't it?
Absolutely. And I do think that the small and specific is really, really important. So coming away with something like you need to improve your behaviour management is invariably unhelpful. But saying something like stop the child at the front from tapping his pen and you might see some gains is perhaps more helpful, even if it does sound so small as to be irrelevant. Those sort of little incremental gains can be incredibly powerful.
And coming up with strategies of how to do things like that, like working on questioning, time management, how to pace your lesson, how to make sure that your activities are the right length. Apart from just observing good teachers do it, what do you recommend for newer teachers to do if they want to improve their CPD on those sorts of things?
I think that getting into classrooms and seeing how it's done is powerful, but what can be really, really helpful is actually working with a more experienced teacher to almost script what you're going to say. And actually this forms part of our coaching model. So saying to, if we take the example of somebody, a child tapping a pen throughout a lesson, working through how you're going to have that conversation can be incredibly helpful and avoid the conflict that often comes with perhaps a misplaced tone or that kind of thing. Another way that NQTs and less experienced teachers can improve their pedagogical practice, I think, is by actually improving their subject knowledge. So sometimes if a teacher is struggling, it might be attributed to poor pedagogical practice or inexperience, and actually they're struggling because they're not sure where the lesson's going or they're not sure what needs to come next in the content of what they're delivering. I'm a true believer in there being like a mix of both subject knowledge and pedagogical practice, but I think having expert subject knowledge gives you a confidence that whatever comes up next in the lesson you'll be able to cope with, and I think that can really, really enhance your teaching practice and delivery.
And when it comes to developing your subject knowledge, I think it's quite tricky because you can read lots of amazing blogs and watch lots of good videos on YouTube about the books and about like deep analysis of the books, for example with English, but looking at exam scripts, recalling past papers and reading through full mark answers is actually also really helpful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really helpful, absolutely. I think that there needs to be something from leadership to ensure that people have the opportunity to develop their subject knowledge as part of their CPD offer. I think schools nationally are doing this really, really well, but there are still people who seem to be having to sit through 2 hours of behaviour management when they've been teaching 15 years and yet they really, really want to get their teeth into physics because they've never had to teach that at A level before, or they really want to get their teeth into King Lear as a new text, and that, or whatever it may be within the subject area. And I think that leadership teams who are recognizing that and allowing time for that kind of development will see remarkable gains in not only the quality of teaching and learning, but also in their curriculum and the planning, and possibly in staff retention and recruitment as that reputation expands.
Happy teachers are learning teachers, aren't they?
Exactly.
It keeps you happy and sane in your job if you feel like you're continually getting better, and you know you're if you can feel like your teaching gets better year on year, you're more likely to stay somewhere because you feel like you genuinely are growing. Now, when we say, you know, preparing to teach a new text or preparing to teach a new topic, you might go out and do some really thorough research in that area to prepare. And when you're researching, you'll find things on lots of different online providers of different courses and units that you can do on these topics. But how can you discern where the good stuff is? What do you think teachers should, if a teacher's listening to this and is thinking, yes, I'm going to go and really work on my knowledge of this area, how can you pick out the good stuff from the bad stuff that's out there?
I think there are ways within each subject community to look for verifiable sources and reliable sources. Obviously that depends on your subject area. We've also have whether it's at school level or individual level, access to the Chartered College database. There's ways in which you can turn to your subject community, engage with local universities, or not necessarily local universities, engage with higher education to look at what research they're producing. I think that there are reputable publishers who are printing contemporary works. You know, we need to stay up together with the way that our subject communities are changing and evolving. You know, I don't believe in a static canon that we should turn to. I think that we need to respect the classics and also look to what's happening now. And you know, an example would be, I'm sorry, I know this is quite English specific, but the first thing I would do if I was teaching a new Shakespeare play would be to read the entire Shakespeare play, but also read the Arden edition and read the entire introduction, which is written by scholars who surpass most subject knowledge at secondary and further education level, and learn from the best.
It's quite difficult when you're new to work out where to look, and like you said, all those suggestions you've made is so helpful. And finding those communities in your subject areas or in primary, like in your key stages, and finding sometimes having like a fellow geeky teacher friend is really useful.
Yeah, this is the other thing that sorry to interrupt you. This is the other thing I was going to say, is like, we don't all have to be the expert in everything, and building a team where people are given time to develop and grow is incredibly powerful. It's good for each department to have an expert in each area. And when I say expert, you know, we need to remember that most teachers have got postgraduate qualifications, many have master's degrees, some have PhDs, and we seem to forget that in the like busy dash of the school day. We're well-educated people, and I think that we can learn from each other. It can be amazing to have a subject expert within and this is obviously only possible in larger faculties, I suppose, but have a subject expert in each area, and then CPD can come from that person, and that can work on a rotational basis.
And a lot of the time, the subject knowledge doesn't always rely upon having years and years in the classroom. Of course, it does go together. Like, the longer you've been teaching a topic, often the more you'll read around it and you'll have a really good understanding of that topic. But we've also got to respect the knowledge of newer teachers who perhaps are career-changing teachers and who've got lots of experience in teaching that in that topic in a different way. How about when we try and talk about knowledge, subject knowledge audits, like how do you think a teacher can work out what it is they don't know, like to know, how can they assess themselves where their CPD should look?
I think subject knowledge audits can be incredibly powerful. I actually had to complete one on my PGCE at Bristol University, where we evaluated, I think it was a 5-point scale of in every single area that the university deemed to be important for the teaching of English. And from there, we set about trying to plug those gaps. Of course, in order to do that, you need somebody to write the audit in the first place for you to undertake. And then what gets included in that audit, for you to assess your knowledge against, is obviously incredibly subjective. So I think that we can work, once again, we can work with our subject bodies, we can work with our subject, you know, communities, and with the universities to think about what is it that in within each subject area, where does the knowledge, where, what do we need to know to deliver an expert curriculum and a deep curriculum and a curriculum that reflects 21st century?
Yeah.
Global curriculum.
And how about the NQTs this year who haven't had the same amount of time in the classroom as previous years have had? Do you think that they're at a disadvantage this year?
I think that a wise leadership team and timetabler will have given them a lighter timetable. I know that this can and does happen and has happened this year, and that time can then be used for, as we've discussed, getting in and seeing other teachers teach and catching up on their subject knowledge. I do think it's hard for them, especially for whatever age group you teach. There's a way that we can form relationships with some with young people of each age group, and there's ways that we can communicate with them effectively and ensure that they feel listened to and that we're listened to. And I'm very, very, very much in favour of a, you know, dialogic approach to teaching. And I think that pitching that right comes with practice, and perhaps they have missed out. But I don't see it as anything that can't be remedied within this year.
This year's got so many challenges. I think that the NQT, the lack of classroom time that NQTs have had will soon fade into insignificance as we get going. And when you think about the time you'll have in your whole teaching career of like 20, 30, 40 years, it's actually only just a small amount of time they've missed, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that they've, you know, got through the first, well, they did 6 months of a PGCE or yep. whatever training they were undertaking before we went into lockdown. They've hopefully had some time in schools, time to think about the issues, and perhaps lockdown offered some opportunities for plugging some gaps, maybe in subject knowledge or in reading up on, you know, theoretical approaches to, you know, their subject area or teach.
Twiddling their thumbs, is it? There's plenty of stuff going on.
Yeah, exactly.
We're in lockdown. So what not a lot of people might know about you, Sarah, is that you actually did a carpentry course, didn't you?
Oh, I did. I did.
You did. Do you think in doing that,
I remembered
that doing that course, you learned a little about how people learn?
It was probably the hardest course I've ever done in my life, Gráinne. I made a small bookshelf. Yeah, I did that when I had a very, very tiny baby. An evening course. And I learned some of the different tools. It's all hand tools, different joints, and how to put things together and that kind of thing. What was your question?
So in doing that, you truly did go back into the role of a novice again. When
yep.
we're all CPD, we're normally looking at something that's in our subject area that we yep. all know a bit about. Learning something like carpentry, which aside from the wood tech lessons you must have had at school yourself, which were probably a long time
ago. Yeah. They were a long time ago, thank you. Yeah.
do wood tech. No, I know in some schools, when we went to school, we didn't always get to do wood tech. It's a boys.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But did you get to do it?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so you had a little bit of knowledge about it. But how did it feel to be back in that novice seat? Do you think it...
Oh, amazing. Amazing. But I think there's a novelty... There's a novelty element with something like taking up carpentry as an adult. It was incredibly disempowering at times, and the mistakes that you make, you think, oh, I can hear my teacher telling me not to do it in this way, and yet I'm continuing and I don't know how to stop. And yeah, it really does, doing something like that really does place you on the other side of the classroom, I guess. It's really, really, really enjoyable. And I think that you realise how many perhaps learned habits you have that need to be broken down and then reconstructed. So a few months later, quite blistered, I emerged with a little bookshelf. I'd really, really recommend doing something like that. Yeah, and you're right, it was a enlightening learning process.
I think that any opportunity you have to learn a new skill and to deepen your empathy with the students that we teach is a good thing for teachers to do. It reminds us, I think it's humbling sometimes, isn't it, to learn something new and to remember what it's like to have no knowledge and to be a complete beginner again.
Yeah, and I think that with, especially when we get to GCSE and A-level, I think that we sometimes take for granted certain concepts. And I do not doubt for a second that this also happens at primary school, where teachers have to kind of reflect and not assume a knowledge or assume a skill that the young ones hold as well. But it can be really, really helpful to take a step back and think, hang on a minute, if I've never, ever read this before, or I've never experienced this language before, or I've never gone through this process before in whatever domain it may be, then it can help us consider how we can deliver those lessons and that learning more effectively. I have a friend who wanted to go through the experience of reading a Shakespeare play as a total novice, but this person has a degree in English literature. So he chose a play that I know well, Coriolanus, and he had never picked up before. And he asked me to write him a series of questions, which he was going to answer having watched a film version, to go through the experience of learning a new Shakespeare play from scratch as a novice. So that was, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting exercise, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the questions were, you know, really, really quite basic. So some of the names of the main characters and who's married to who and who three women are in a certain scene and that kind of thing. And it's incredible what you actually miss just on a first introduction. And yet as English teachers, we quite often only ever read one scene once. Mm. Or if we're looking at a theatre production or watching a film version of it, only seeing that version once. And yet we expect our students to absorb knowledge and not only absorb the knowledge, but have an understanding of what's happened and be able to critically reflect on it. And lots of these texts we've studied at degree level or master's level and gone into a lot of depth on, and then reconsidered maybe as adults in later life, and, you know, spent time discussing with other people with similar backgrounds. And then when we're presenting it to students, we're kind of sometimes forgetting that they've missed all of that part of the process.
I think it does us all good to put ourselves back into the shoes of our students sometimes.
Absolutely.
Right, on that lovely note, I'll draw that to a close. Thank you for speaking to me today, Sarah.
Oh, no, thank you for having me.